The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Inside the Huddle. We are doing our pregame show for the Indiana-Western Kentucky matchup on Saturday. Our co-host TJ Inman will join us shortly, but we have a great show for you filled with, what keys to the game, a preview of the opponent, and we'll probably go around the conference again as conference play does open in Piscataway this week. TJ, welcome. How are you today?
I'm doing great. It's a gorgeous day here in Indianapolis. It has felt like football weather if you go outside at night, though, and that's always kind of pleasant as football season rolls around. It's good for it to kind of feel like fall, but I use 2-0, and I'm really looking forward to this game on Saturday. It's going to be one that we have talked about extensively as a key to IU's non-conference. They've avoided a couple of landmines here early in the first 2 weeks, and this is going to be a major test.
Yeah, it sure will be. Western Kentucky comes in at 2-0, their first time at 2-0. Since 2005, they're receiving votes in both the AP and the coaches poll, so they're a quality team, but they are banged up. They lost running back Leon Allen, who's by far their best runner, out for the year with a knee injury. Jared Dangerfield, who I keep wanting to call Rodney, banged up, and their star cornerback, Wonderful Terry, is it looks like he's doubtful for the game, according to quotes from Jeff Brohm on earlier in the week.
I never want to, obviously, Leon Allen's injury was pretty gruesome. That's not something that anybody that has a heart is going to be happy about, but strictly from an on-the-field standpoint, it's going to be much easier to come up with a game plan to defend these guys without Leon Allen on the field. A very good running back, a capable receiver that can really make you pay when he gets the ball in space, screen passes or little slip plays. They used him really, really well a season ago, and he was off to a really good start against Louisiana Tech, already at 100 yards for the game before he was done with that injury. So missing him is going to be huge. Not having Wonderful Terry is not going to be great for them. They do have a little bit of depth at running back, but they're fairly thin there. They do not have a lot of answers there. The main guy that's going to be getting the ball for them is DeAndre Ferby. He is a redshirt freshman that is a big guy. He's listed at 240, and he looks that. Definitely more of a just straight up in between the tackles back. He should not. I won't say he won't because, anything can happen, but he shouldn't break a lot of big plays on IU. He's going to be kind of tough to stop in short yardage situations, but if you watch them against Louisiana Tech, their running game really, really took a big hit when Leon Allen went out. DeAndre Ferby averaged less than 3 yards a carry in that game. Other than him, they have Anthony Davis, who's a former Hoosier, transferred to Western Kentucky after his eligibility was done at IU. Never really made an impact on the field. He's a member of the scout team. Kevin Wilson has said that Anthony Davis would be a part of the rotation if he were still at IU. I don't know about that. We'll take his word for it. But he was never a part of the rotation when he was here, so take that for what you will. And then a junior named DeMontre Ware that I don't know anything about, but the Leon Allen injury is really huge. Dangerfield, I'm expecting him to play, but we don't know. And Wonderful Terry not being in there should make things a little bit easier for Ricky Jones, who I would guess is who Terry would have been covering.
Yeah, the Wonderful Terry, their defense isn't as strong as they would like. And Wonderful Terry is one of their better players, so it'll definitely be a challenge for IU defensively. Also on special teams, they have a great return game. Brandon Towner was awesome against Louisiana Tech. I'm not sure exactly how many yards he had, but he did win Conference USA Special Teams of the Player of the Week. Actually, Western Kentucky swept the Players of the Week categories for Conference USA. So that's how good they are. But Towner had a punt return for a touchdown and a couple long kickoff returns. And IU's kick coverage was better last week, but they'll be tested this week for sure. Going through some of the statistics, Brandon Dowdy's completing nearly 70% of his passes. He is averaging 9.56 yards per attempt, which is very good, and he has a quarterback rating of 159.1. So he's the real deal. If you've seen him play, he throws a great ball, and he's very fun to watch, as long as maybe he's not playing your game. Right now, their leading receiver is Tyler Higbee. He's a tight end, I believe, and he has 11 catches, 11 catches for 190 yards and a long of 65 with the touchdown. So this is the third straight game where the IU will be facing a big, tight end. They shut down Jonnu Smith last week, 5 catches for 25 yards. So, they'll have their work cut out with Tyler Higbee.
Yeah, I think that going up against the tight end is a bit of a concern, just because I'm kind of reminded of Higbee looks a lot like, I think it's Adam, is that right? Adam Cune from SIU. He had a really good game against IU, kind of gashed the defense quite a few times. But, IU did look not great, but they looked improved on defense in week two. And one of the important things that I'm going to be watching for is the return of Tigre Scales. How he fits in to the linebacker rotation. It seems that he is definitely going to play. Has there been absolute confirmation on that, or is that just what we're assuming?
They said he's back. He's listed as the number two behind Oliver. I think it's safe to assume he's back. It's not safe to assume that Dutra is back, even though he's listed as a starter. He was listed as a starter last week. And it just, people get all crazy about depth charts. With Wilson, it's, who knows? You'll see at game time. I'll be down on the field, warm-ups, looking for people who are dressed. Dutra was listed as a starter last week. I did not dress. This week listed as a starter, so who knows? Wilson said he was close at the press conference on Monday. They'll also be without the services of Dom Booth for a while. He's out with an undisclosed injury. Wilson said he's out. He's not able to go. It's nothing major, and by major he means it does not require surgery. Maybe Dom Booth takes a red shirt this year that he didn't get to take last year, but hopefully he gets back soon. So get on the injury front. That's that. Expect Tigre Scales back. He might not start. He might be like Fant last week, where he comes in later in the game and makes an impact just because he hasn't played the first two games and he's trying to earn his way back on. So TJ, we're going to move on to keys to victory for IU. What is your first key to victory?
Well, I touched on it a little bit. It's how is Western Kentucky going to adjust to the loss of Leon Allen? This is a guy that after the Louisiana Tech game, when he was asked about when their head coach Jeff Brohm was asked about how they would deal with that loss, they didn't know exactly how long he's going to be out at that time, but I think everyone assumed, but just by looking at it, that it was a long-term injury. He said that if you asked everyone in the football staff and in that on that team who their most important player on offense was, that it would be Leon Allen. Yeah, he just does a lot for them. He's a good blocker. He's a capable receiver, a very, very talented running back that is just really efficient at picking up yards. So they're going to definitely miss him. So my question is, how are they going to adjust to it from a game plan situation? Does that mean that they are going to put even more of a burden on Brandon Doughty? Are we going to see him throw the ball, you know, 60 times? That's definitely not what they would like to do, but they might be forced into that if their running game is totally ineffective. Or are we going to see kind of a running back by committee where you see DeAndre Ferby as kind of a pound up the middle back and use Anthony Davis, who had a 28-yard run against Louisiana Tech. He only had two carries, but he did have one of them for 28 yards. Are we going to see him used as kind of a change of pace guy? Are they going to get creative and use, maybe use some tight ends? I know they have some depth at tight end. You can use some of them in unique situations. I don't know, and that's something that the IU coaching staff isn't going to know either. So planning for the different wrinkles that are going to be thrown in with the loss of Allen is going to be an interesting thing to watch.
Yeah, it definitely will be. And I go back and forth. I think that, you know, Indiana was decent against the run against FIU, actually very good against the run. I said decent because they were not good against the run against Southern Illinois. But that offensive line isn't great for Western Kentucky, and maybe it plays into their favor to throw the ball a little bit more, some quick patterns, and we saw that work for FIU. Anyway, my first key to the game is it's going to be, again, a running game question. It's IU has to establish Jordan Howard. This is, you know, I don't – as much as fans and people want it to be a shootout and lots of points are going to be scored, I think that's exactly what IU doesn't want to do. Western Kentucky is a lot more explosive than IU right now, although IU can put up points. They don't – they've had one long touchdown play is that pass to Ricky Jones. Other than that, it's all been methodical drives that eat up time and clock. So establishing Howard, running the clock down, just grinding down this Western Kentucky defense and giving your defense a chance to catch their breath, get coached up on the sideline, is going to be huge.
Yes. Yeah, along those lines, you know, Western Kentucky surrendered 223 rushing yards with a 7.2 yards per carry average to Louisiana Tech. They gave up 168 yards on the ground to Vanderbilt. So this is a running defense for Western Kentucky that can absolutely be had. And I think that kind of a – it's not often under Kevin Wilson that I think of IU wanting to kind of grind an opponent down, control the clock, shorten the game. It's not often that IU has that game plan, but I do think that that's the best way to go about this. It's often said, you know, the best defense is a ball control, good offense. Well, yeah, I mean, Brandon Doughty can't hurt you if he's on the bench. So I think that that's the absolute best way to go about this. Ball out of Western Kentucky's hands either. IU has a very good running game. I think that that's probably when their offense is at the best right now, is when they're giving the ball to Jordan Howard and then using the success do you get there to run some play action, maybe to the tight end through the seam. We saw that a couple times. Or kind of some play action rollouts where you get Sudfeld rolling to the right and find the tight end open. We've seen that play work a few times. Or maybe an occasional deep ball to Ricky Jones or Simi Cobbs. Cobbs had a couple of nice deep ball catches. And like you said, Jones had that one. So I don't think it's just let's keep the ball out of Western Kentucky's hands. I think they want to do that. Plus, you know, this is a very good running game and a Western Kentucky defense that appears to be susceptible to that. So I think that that's absolutely a key thing is to establish Howard. and Devine Redding as well, but especially Jordan Howard, and grind out this Western Kentucky defense and keep their offense on the bench.
Right. TJ, we're going on to the second key to the game. My second key to the game is going to be forcing turnovers on defense. Very generic. IU is, I think, plus four now in the turnover department. They forced two against Southern Illinois, three last week, including a pick six against FIU. Getting more possessions against this Western Kentucky defense and getting your defense off the field, it's only going to help. So if Indiana could get pressure on Doughty and force him into some bad throws or have some more strip sacks like last week, this defense, you know, maybe IU gets the ball back and puts up more points and starts to run away with this thing.
You know, last week it was very pleasant to see the IU defense making big plays. And, you know, it wasn't just a big play where, oh, hey, look at that, they got a tackle for a loss. And they got some of those, but they were actually legitimate big, big game-changing plays, like forcing a fumble on a sack and recovering it deep in opposing territory, which led to the Mitchell Page touchdown. Obviously, the pick six was the turning point of the game, and that was a huge play forced by quarterback pressure from Oliver, and then just good instinctual play by Jamil Cook and good speed to turn it into 6 points.
Speaking off of points off of turnovers, they scored 20 points, should have been 21, but they missed the extra point. So they are cashing in those opportunities for touchdowns.
Right. Yeah, that's a key thing. If you're not turning the points into touchdowns or the turnovers into points, then, you know, you're really wasting those plays. It's a good thing to prevent the other team from having the scoring opportunity, but you really want to turn those into points as well. And so far, IU's doing a good job of that. They're doing a good job of taking care of the ball on offense. I think Sudfeld be a little bit more careful with some of his passes. But for the most part, IU's doing a good job of taking care of the ball and doing a good enough job last week of creating negative plays for the opposing offense. And, that's something. Generating quarterback pressure is going to be key, because if they let Brandon Doughty sit back there and have a protected pocket consistently, he's too good. He's going to pick you apart, even if you have a good secondary, which we don't know if IU has or not. They have a young one. We know that. We don't know if they're good. At this point, I think that you would say they're not. But they could be with some time. I think that they will definitely develop into that. But right now, if Brandon Doughty just is able to sit back there in a protected pocket, which he was against Louisiana Tech, he's going to just absolutely rip you apart. He could shred you for 500 yards if he's given the time to do so. Vanderbilt was
put a disclaimer on that. If he had protection against any team in the country, he'd put up 500 yards. He's just that good. It's not a knock on the IU defense. I just wanted to make that clear. That's how good Brandon Doughty is. And you saw, you're right, you're alluding to the Vanderbilt game there where they got some pressure.
Yes. Yeah, Vanderbilt was able to get some pressure. They sacked him 5 times. They were in his face a lot more than that, forcing him to make some inaccurate throws, some throws earlier than he wanted to. They had some drops early in that game that cost them as well, and that might have been a result of some of the pressure forcing those early throws, and the receivers weren't quite ready for it. So I think the getting pressure, and I did want to ask you, what do you think the linebacker rotation is going to look like? I know that, you know, I'm not talking about who starts or anything like that, but what do you think linebacker rotation-wise we're going to see the most of? I imagine that Marcus Oliver is going to continue to get playing time, even with Tigre Scales' return, because he's been really, really good. You know, the coaching staff said that, yeah, they could absolutely see the field at the same time, Scales and Oliver, that is. So what do you think the linebacker rotation that they're going to use most often is?
I mean, it really depends how the game is going. You know, if you want speed, Oliver, having Oliver and Scales on the field at the same time is going to be huge. it really depends on how much pressure those front three and TJ Simmons could put on Doughty, and how Zach Shaw is playing a bandit. If you need more speed, you're probably going to go with Scales and Oliver, and maybe even you might even put Damian Willis in if you don't have enough speed with TJ Simmons. So I think it really depends on the front three, Zach Shaw, and really how much speed you need. It might be a wet track on Saturday, so that might slow things down. But you're going to see a lot of people play. Western Kentucky's probably going to run a lot of plays. If IU doesn't establish a run and eat some clock, there might be 100 plays run by Western Kentucky. So you're going to need everybody. It's all hands on deck. And I think you're going to see a lot of different combinations that we probably haven't seen in the past yet.
The combination I'm most intrigued to see would be Zach Shaw at Bandit and then Simmons, Oliver, and Scales. I think that's their if you're just talking about getting the best four on the field, I think that's who it is. Obviously, we haven't seen Scales yet this season, but all indications were that he just continued to improve as a player throughout the offseason, and he was really good last year. So looking forward to having him back, and it couldn't come at a better time. He seems to be suited to defend this type of offense. And
yes,
and
that tight end.
Big time handy. Yes.
And the tight end. He did have three picks last year, so he has good ball skills, and he's something that they were missing against the tight end at Southern Illinois, and a similar tight end with Western Kentucky, who's also 6'6". TJ, what's your second key to the game, I guess, if we haven't touched upon it yet?
Yeah, we kind of did. We talked about IU's defense. Mine was just, can they continue to improve? Because we saw improvement from week one to week two, which, to be clear, was partially aided by the return of some players, particularly Ralph Green and Darius Latham, who came back. We talked about this on the recap show and in all of our articles, really. Two guys made on the defensive line, getting penetration into the offensive backfield. And that goes along with what you were talking about, what I was talking about a little bit earlier, pressuring the quarterback. Those guys are going to be a part of that, and I think that played a big part in IU's defense getting better. If you can get pressure into the backfield, create some negative plays, get some sacks or some tackles for losses on running plays, that throws the offense off schedule and just makes a huge difference. If they are constantly getting, 5, 6, 7 yards on first down, you're going to have a really hard time getting them off the field, and eventually they're probably going to break a big play on you and score. If you're able to get them behind the schedule, force a second and long or a third and long, your chances of forcing a punt or forcing a negative play just go up exponentially. So the question for me is, can this defense, which is really, really young, really inexperienced, especially in the secondary, can they continue to improve after probably having their confidence rocked quite a bit in week one, built back up some in week number two? So, this is just a matter of taking another step. And what does that mean? What would that look like statistically? I don't really know, because this is such a high-powered offense. I don't really want to put a number on it to say, well, if they hold them to 500 yards of offense, it would be an okay day or anything like that. I think it's, if this defense can make enough plays to contribute to IU winning a football game against Western Kentucky, I will take that as a positive.
Yeah, I think it'll be a you'll know it when you see it type of deal. You know a bad defense when you see a bad defense. You know a good defense when you see a good defense. So it'll come down to how you watch the game. I'm going to go ahead and go with my third key to the game. And I have a fourth if we need to get to it, which we should. It's improving red zone efficiency. Last week, IU made 5 red zone trips. Settled for 2 field goals against an offense like Western Kentucky. That's just not going to cut it. You're going to have to punch it in 7 points, at least 80% of the time, if not more. So, IU last week moved the ball very well against in between the 20s, and then just got bogged down a little bit with play calling and some penalties in the red zone. So they got to clean that up and get 7 points instead of three.
Yep, I 100% agree. I extend that out to about the 35-yard line. Anytime you get into that area, it's a scoring opportunity. I know that some statistical models even talk about once you cross into opposing territory. So once you get across the 50-yard line, it's considered a scoring chance. And then you take the number of plays that they had in those scoring chances divided by the number of points they got, and you get points per scoring chance, which is an interesting stat. And IU just wasn't good enough there last week. They have to do a better job, especially against the high-powered offense where you're going to need every point you can get. You just can't get inside of those scoring opportunities and come up empty-handed or come up with only 3 points instead of a touchdown. That red zone efficiency. And I'd like to see a little bit more I don't want to say a little bit better play calling, because it's easy to say that when the plays don't work out. Oh, this is a bad play call. But I would like to see a little bit more creative play calling in the red zone. I'd like to see a little bit more use of the tight end in the red zone. I think that they've talked a lot about how talented the tight ends are, how much they like them, and I agree. They are good. Anthony Corsaro is good. They've got really good tight ends. And I'd like to see those guys utilized in the red zone. It's been a long time since we've seen a tight end have even a red zone target that I can remember. So I'd love to see those guys get some more opportunities, because their size could and should be a good target in the red zone, or even Simi Cobbs being a target in the red zone. And then Jordan Howard should be a good red zone weapon because he's so efficient at getting yardage and not getting negative plays and pounding the ball through the middle. So this should be a good red zone offense on paper. So far, it hasn't come out that way.
Yeah, definitely. They score points, which is fine, but they need to, and they're improved over last year's red zone offense just because Nate Sudfeld's back and all of that. But yeah, they need to start getting those changing those field goals into touchdowns. Anyway, my final key to the game, I think we'll both agree on it, is stopping Brandon Towner. Towner was awesome, not Brandon Towner, it's Kylan Towner. He's a small, fast wide receiver, sophomore. He had an awesome game against Louisiana Tech. I wouldn't kick to him. Like you said in your preview going around the Big Ten, I would not kick to Towner, and I would not kick to William Likely, which is where Griffin Oaks comes in handy. He's bombed a few kickoffs out of the end zone, but Eric Toth's going to have his work cut out for him. He's got to put that ball, coffin corner it a little bit, and if you have to kick it out of bounds, for a net kick of 30 yards, man, do it, because this guy's going to take one to the house if you let him.
Yeah, the keys to that on the punting, well, on the kickoffs, obviously, Griffin Oaks is going to be important to I would tell him, put that ball out of the end zone. Worst case scenario, it goes out of play and they start the ball with an illegal procedure penalty. I would not give Towner the opportunity to hurt you with a huge game-changing return. And then on punting, you're right, Eric Toth is going to have to do a good job of directional punting, and he's going to have to do a good job of getting some hang time on those kicks to allow the coverage team to get down there and force Towner to think about taking a fair catch. He's going to try to take every opportunity he can to get a big return. If Eric Toth can get some hang time on the punts to allow the coverage team to get down there and force him to at least think about a fair catch, that would be an accomplishment. but I think that having a special teams coverage performance like what they had against FIU would go a long way towards helping the Hoosiers on Saturday. They were good against FIU, and I hope to see the same type of performance this coming Saturday.
Yeah, Towner led the team last week in all-purpose yards with 169. He had 132. 98 of those coming on a kickoff return for a touchdown. So, yeah, he's going to be a game changer on special teams. That's going to do it for our coverage of IU Western Kentucky right now. We're going to take a trip around the Big Ten. Conference play opens up at Rutgers this week where there is, you know, it's a disaster in progress. Another guy from Rutgers got arrested yesterday. And it came out that Lorante Carew was pushed a female down to the ground or slammed her down to the ground and apparently injured her hip and her hands and other body parts. But it's a disaster down at Rutgers. But we're going to start out with Illinois at North Carolina. It's noon on ESPN2. Illinois fired their coach a week before the season, but have looked dominant in a 2-0 start. Their level of competition might not have been great, but they have outscored opponents 96-3, and this will be a good road test for Illinois against North Carolina.
Yes, I am very, very surprised by what Illinois has done so far. Like you said, Western Illinois and Kent State, they're very bad teams. I mean, still, you outscore opponents 96-3. That's amazing. They have really shut down their opponents on offense. Defensively, these guys have, I think they've given up 17 first downs total so far. You know, Wes Lunt is a very good quarterback if he stays healthy, and right now he's healthy. Geronimo Allison has stepped up. He's proving to be a good number one target since Mike Dudek is injured. And Josh Ferguson is just a really good all-around running back. Right now, speaking of the red zone opportunities we talked about earlier, far they are 100% on their red zone scoring chances. So they're doing the things that add up to winning football. They're not allowing any sacks. They're converting on third down. North Carolina, they've got a quarterback that's a dual-threat guy, Marquise Williams, but he does make some mistakes. He did that multiple times against South Carolina in week one, which is why they lost. He had two interceptions that he threw in the end zone. So, you know, North Carolina is favored in this one by double digits, which I'm kind of surprised by based on the play of the teams thus far. I imagine the overall talent level for North Carolina is higher, and it's in Chapel Hill, but I think this is going to be a really interesting game. We're going to find out if Illinois is for real or not.
Definitely. I still would take North Carolina. I don't know. You know, I just don't know what Illinois is going to do on the road. I don't know. I don't know if Kent State was good. I don't know if Western Illinois was good or even decent. But we're going to move on to another big Big Ten team. South Florida Bulls are traveling to Maryland to take on the Terrapins at noon. Maryland got blasted by Bowling Green last week, 48-27. It looks like they gave up 42 second-half points there, lost at home. Bowling Green, man, was really impressive, and Maryland's going to try and come back and recover from that. South Florida's 1-1. They hung tough with at Florida State last week before being destroyed by Dalvin Cook, who had 266 yards and three touchdowns. What are your thoughts on that game, PJ?
Well, yeah, I mean, Dalvin Cook, he was phenomenal against South Florida. The good news is for them is that Maryland doesn't have Dalvin Cook or anybody close to Dalvin Cook. Their running game they think that it was going to be pretty good, but thus far it has not really lived up to that. And their secondary, I mean, my goodness, Sean Davis in particular in single coverage against Roger Lewis, he might have tried to file a lawsuit or something, because Roger Lewis just abused him over and over again. It was really ugly. Matt Johnson is an incredible quarterback, and I hesitate to say that Maryland is going to be terrible on defense all year, just because Bowling Green is going to do that to a lot of people. They put up 30 points on Tennessee and could have put up a few more. They had some mistakes that cost them some points. Overall, I don't know if South Florida is any good. They hung around with Florida State, but their offense really does kind of struggle. They've got a dual threat quarterback as well. For Maryland, the only thing I don't understand, and we talked about this just now with Towner, there's no reason for teams to kick the ball to William Likely. He almost changed the game against Bowling Green and saved Maryland, but their defense and Bowling Green's offense was just too much. They had 692 yards, but William Likely continues to change games as a punt returner and a kick returner. There's no reason for people to kick to him. And I really wish that teams would figure that out, because it's the only thing that Maryland's offense has going for it right now. They've switched quarterbacks. Caleb Rowe is going to start this week. It's going to be an interesting game that Maryland really needs to win, because the fan base is not at all pleased with offensive coordinator Mike Locksley. They're not happy with Randy Edsall, even though recruiting is going well. The on-field product continues to be kind of underwhelming. So, and they go to Virginia next week, so they've got a tough non-conference slate. It's going to be an interesting game.
Definitely. Next, we're going to move on to one of the games that probably is going to be less competitive. UNLV at Michigan. UNLV's not a good football team, and traveling to Michigan from that time zone is never a good thing. Michigan's fired up. They won last week, and I predict this game's going to get out of hand pretty quickly.
Yep. Yeah, this will not be very competitive. The impressive thing to point out here, and this is in my viewing guide thing, Michigan's defense gave up a 78-yard touchdown drive to Oregon State. After that, Oregon State totaled 60 yards for the rest of the game. That's they're not a good team, but still, that's a major conference team that's in a major conference, Pac-12, that typically has good offenses, and 60 yards over the final three quarters. That's really, really impressive from Michigan's defense. We've still yet to see much from the passing game that you'd be excited about, but their running game did get going last week. Devion Smith had a good week. That's how they want to play. Dominant defense, ball control offense. That's how Jim Harbaugh wants to play. And last week was kind of the start of the blueprint you saw. And for a game that was pretty out of hand, that was a very, very loud atmosphere at the Big House. Those people are absolutely fired up for Harbaugh. And it's going to be tough to win at Michigan this year, no matter what kind of team Michigan has.
Exactly. That's home field advantage in college football for you. Anyway, moving on, we'll stay in the Mitten State. It's Air Force against Michigan State. This might be a classic letdown game for Michigan State, but I don't think D'Antonio lets that happen. Both teams are 2-0. Going into that, Michigan State knocked off Oregon 31-28 last week. Unfortunately, I didn't get to see any of that game. Missed a good one. But it looks like, they're getting a top vote in the country. And basically, the Big Ten swept that category between them and Ohio State. So what are your thoughts on Air Force and Michigan State?
Air Force, they struggled last week to put away San Jose State, who was they're decent, but nothing to write home about. They pulled away at the fourth quarter. But Air Force does run the triple option. It's a tough offense to prepare for. The Michigan State staff said that they were preparing for it during the summer, a little bit every week in practice. They ran the ball last week for 428 yards. They do hold the ball for quite a bit. They put an emphasis on time of possession. I don't think that they have a defense that can slow down Michigan State enough. You know, the Spartans were pretty impressive against Oregon. Obviously, to knock off a team and a program like Oregon is very impressive. The Ducks could have won that game if a couple of things had gone differently, mainly a pass down the sideline that was just out of the grasp of a wide receiver that Vernon Adams floated a little bit too much. Could have put Oregon ahead very late in the fourth quarter, but a win's a win, and they are 2-0, and there is a plausible scenario where the Big Ten gets two teams into the college football playoff, which is pretty interesting for as much as the conference gets trashed nationally if they were to get two teams into the college football playoff. But there's a long way to go before we start thinking about that.
Yeah, definitely. Next, we move on to Kent State at Minnesota. Minnesota coming off an exciting big win at Colorado State in Fort Collins. So they're 1-1. Kent State won last week to even their record at 1-1. But the last time they played a Big Ten team, they got smoked 52-3 at Illinois. Minnesota's offense is not great, but they should be able to put up some points, and their defense is pretty legit.
Yes, Minnesota's defense is really good. Their offense currently very, very banged up. They've got three rotation wide receivers, including two starters that are out with injury. They've got three tight ends that are injured. Two of them are done for the season. So their offense, which was not great to begin with, particularly the passing offense, they've got some issues there. But Kent State, this stat, courtesy of Alan Moff, a Kent State writer, Kent State has been outscored 268-6 in their last six Big Ten or games against Big Ten schools. 268-6. So I don't think there's much.
Not how you win football games.
No, it is not.
So it's tough to win when you're getting outscored by that much. Anyway, we're going to move on to the Library Bowl. How about this? Northwestern at Duke, both teams 2-0. All kidding aside, this is might be the best game of the evening or of the afternoon in the Big Ten. Both teams are resurgent. Northwestern is now ranked 23rd. Duke, who's been to, I think, three straight bowl games now, is pretty legit. They're a good team. They knocked off Tulane at Tulane. And I think it was the North Carolina A&T or some team like that last week. Or North Carolina Central. But it'll be a good test for both teams to see exactly where they stand. And it's two similar programs. It's something that Pat Fitzgerald has wanted to do down the along the road was play teams similar to Northwestern. They played Stanford earlier in the year. They played Duke a couple years ago, I believe, at Northwestern. But now they travel to Durham. So this game's on ESPN3. So you can watch it on Watch ESPN.
Yes, this should be one of the better games of the afternoon. Very intriguing. Duke has turned into a stable program because David Cutcliffe is apparently a wizard. He has turned Duke into a really, really solid team that just now expects to win seven or eight games a year. I'm not entirely sure how that's happened, but recruited well, and he is a really, really bright offensive mind. Their offense currently averaging almost 600 yards a game, 46 points a game. Tulane, I know that the name doesn't sound like much, but that's not a terrible team, and they went to their place where they opened up a new stadium and ruined that inaugural game there by dominating them. And then last week, North Carolina Central, that doesn't mean anything, but this Northwestern defense, really, really good. I think the question mark for Northwestern is, can Clayton Thorson, his first road start, can he do enough? Because I think they are going to have to produce some on offense, which they haven't been required to do yet because the defense has locked down the opposition. I think Duke is going to score some points. It's the best offense Northwestern's played, and this is the best defense that Duke will have played. Something's got to give there.
Yep. And we'll move on to something. If we took our time machine back to the early 90s, this would be the game of the week on on TV, Nebraska at Miami, but it's not the early 90s. It's the mid-2010s, and both teams are kind of stuck in the mud a little bit. Miami hasn't gone back to elite status since the early 2000s. Nebraska, you know, fired a coach for winning 9 games a year, but then, you know, we'll see. They might be stuck at that 9-win level for eternity. But they won last week, coming off a heartbreaking loss to BYU. What are your thoughts on this game?
Yeah, I kind of wrote the same thing in my viewing guide about this being the game of the week in the early 90s. You know, a lot of people making jokes on Twitter and being pretty sarcastic about it. I'm not going to go there because I'm not that clever to make anything that funny. But I think that at least Nebraska is still quite relevant. You know, Miami, Al Golden is under quite a bit of heat. I think a lot of people have written that it's pretty much fait accompli that he's going to be let go at the end of the year unless they perform some type of miracle and win, you know, 10 or 11 games. I don't know if that's true, but to say that his tenure there has been a little underwhelming would be accurate, I think. They've been just okay. And for a program that has the tradition they do and has the amount of talent around them that they do, that's really not good enough. But I don't think it's helped that Florida State, their, you know, in-state neighbor, has won a national title within that time frame. So this is an important home game for Al Golden. He needs every win he can get. And for Nebraska, I think that it's an important game for Mike Riley, a second chance, really, to show under him that they can win big games. And I think that while it's not a matchup between two elite teams or two even elite programs anymore, this is still a cool game, and I'm glad they're playing it.
Yeah, and you know what else it is? An underrated part of this game is Nebraska gets to travel to Florida. Look at those recruits down there. Have those recruits look at that program.
True.
Because yep. It is a schlep and a half to get to Nebraska from Miami. There's no direct flight. So it is a big recruiting weekend probably for Nebraska down there. Next, we move to the number one team in the nation taking on Northern Illinois at home. Brett Bielema probably does not have any words anymore for Ohio State's schedule. It should be a good matchup. Northern Illinois is a solid MAC team, and Ohio State struggled a little bit with They won 38-0, it was against Hawaii. Cardell Jones didn't look as sharp, and he might be in jeopardy of losing that job, but he will still start, I believe. So we'll see what happens. The most intriguing thing is, who's going to end up playing quarterback there again.
Yeah, you said it correctly. Cardell Jones is going to be the starter. Urban Meyer said Jones is starting and JT Barrett will be, quote, ready to go. I think that we will see both quarterbacks again. Northern Illinois, typically a really strong team. I think they are a bit down this year. They struggled a bit with UNLV, who is one of the worst FBS teams in the country. So they struggled a bit with them in their opener. I don't expect the Huskies to give them any kind of a challenge, but definitely the intriguing thing is to see how the quarterback, and it's not even a problem really because both guys are very capable of winning against whoever they play. I do think it's intriguing to see which guy steps forward and maybe one of them at some point is going to have a lights out game and take a stranglehold on that job. I think I'm just not sure who it's going to be.
Yeah. And anytime you say you struggled in a 38-0 win, I get the Hawaii team that's decent and they're not terrible, but
yep.
they're okay. So you
first
have a good
world
team
problems.
Next. Yeah. First world problems. we're moving on to Virginia Tech at Purdue. Game's at 3:30 on ESPNU. Whoever scheduled this non-conference slate for Purdue does not know how to run an athletic department, does not know how to help his coach out. Purdue is much more improved than they were last year, and
yes.
They might get out of this I mean, they might get out of this non-conference schedule at 1-3 and really struggle in the Big Ten then. But they are much improved. It should be a good crowd at Purdue. Virginia Tech coming in, they're not the strongest team. This isn't the, you know, Virginia Tech of those late 90s with Michael Vick. You know, they lost their starting quarterback, and so we'll see. Anything can happen. Purdue's much improved, and it should be a good crowd at Ross-Ade.
Yeah, I had no idea what type of crowd's going to show up. They've had really huge attendance problems, which is understandable. As bad as they've been, that's a problem that we're well aware of. But as IU fans, it's a struggle for attendance. Purdue has kind of been in the same struggle that IU has for the last while, and they were worse than IU in attendance last season, I believe. But, yeah, Michael Brewer's out last week. The start went to Brandon Motley. He was 16 of 24, had 233 yards, ran for another 38. They have a true freshman that the fans are pretty high on named Dwayne Lawson that threw for 51 yards and ran for another 51. They burned his red shirt, which was a bit surprising, I guess. I think that Motley's going to start again. I would expect to see Lawson as well. The strength of Virginia Tech is that defense. And Austin Appleby's going to have to take care of the ball like he did in week two against Indiana State, not like he did in week one against Marshall, where he turned it over four times. So I think that if Appleby takes care of the ball, Purdue has a real good shot to win this one. I like their running game. I like some of their options at wide receiver. Appleby has the same turnover problems that we've seen him have against good defenses in the past, then I would expect Purdue to drop this one to 1-2, and they've got Bowling Green coming in next week, which we know and Maryland knows is certainly nothing to take for granted. So it's a big game for Daryl Hazel. It's a big stretch of two games for him before they get into conference play. I think he needs to win one of them.
Yeah, going, you know, that'd make them 2-2, which would be a quite a feat for this non-conference slate. And I hope Purdue has a good crowd because that's a football traditional rich school, and it's kind of sad to see the death of the fan base over there. As much as, you know, as an IU grad, as much as Purdue's our rival, I want their football team to succeed to a limited amount, but it'd be nice to see a good atmosphere up there. Next, we go.
I think it'd be great to have the bucket game with something on the line, more than just
exactly.
You know, the bucket. I think that'd be awesome. So,
yeah, and a good crowd again.
Or anything,
at Ross-Ade.
Yeah, I'm not going to say blow her up or anything, but but I'm not going to mean it. I'll just say it. I won't mean it. How about that?
Sounds good. Next, we move on to Troy at Wisconsin. Wisconsin got throttled by Alabama, came back and I think put a 59-0 hurting on Miami of Ohio. So we'll see what they do. I'm going to guess they're going to run the ball against Troy. That's what they do. So what are your thoughts on Wisconsin, Troy?
Wisconsin's going to destroy Troy. No pun intended there. The only interesting thing to me for this game, and I'll just look at the stats. I'm not gonna watch much of this one, but it's going to be interesting to see whether or not Wisconsin does put an emphasis on running the ball so far. And part of this is because they played Alabama and because Corey Clements is injured. But so far, the Badgers have thrown the ball 53.2% of the time and run the ball only 46.8% of the time. They've got the fewest rushing yards in the conference. That's not a typo or me misspeaking. They have the fewest rushing yards in the Big Ten. At some point, I would expect that they just start grinding it out like they do all the time and get back to what we consider Wisconsin football. But right now, they're letting Jill Stave kind of air it out, at least by Wisconsin standards, and it worked against Miami of Ohio. I would expect when they have some tougher competition, they rely on that running game, but right now the passing game is ahead of the running game with that retooled offensive line. They had to replace a lot of guys, and obviously replacing Melvin Gordon with Corey Clement, who has been hurt. So That's something to keep an eye on, is whether or not they're capable of just pounding it like they have in the past. We'll see.
Yeah, definitely. Next, we'll skip over Western Kentucky, Indiana, because we spent the first half hour talking about that. Next, we go to the first conference game of the year. It's Rutgers at Penn State. That's going to be a tough one for Rutgers. First time going to Happy Valley in a while. So first conference game at Happy Valley for them. So we'll see how they rebound. It's been nothing but bad news out of Piscataway. Their best receiver, Lerante Carew, looks like he's made the wrong decision about staying in college and was suspended again. This is his second time this year being suspended for slamming a woman onto concrete during an altercation after the game. It was between two women that Carew knew. So we'll see. Another player got arrested yesterday in part of that home invasion ring. I think that's seven now. I lost count, or I can't count that high. Either one, take your pick. But, you know, and then on top of that, they lost a heartbreaker to a Washington State team who lost to Portland State and is not really great. And they lost that game at home. So, you know, we'll see how much longer Kyle Flood is there. I have a feeling he won't be there when he's in Bloomington, when they come to Bloomington. I just don't see how he could survive this before the year is out. Maybe, you know, they have people, I don't know who's running that athletic department, but clearly they have zero control of it. And but back on the field, Penn State's defense is very, very good. Their offense started clicking a little bit against Buffalo, so we'll see where this game goes.
Yeah, it's going to be a struggle for Rutgers with all the off-field issues they have. Lerante Carew suspended indefinitely. We'll keep an eye on that. If there's the IU game, or against IU in October for that homecoming game, we will definitely put that on the site. She's a huge part of what they do. Their passing attack has struggled. I really like their running backs. They've got a bunch of talented ones. They're going to have to lean on that, really, just try to be a power running team that just is more physical than the opposition. And against Penn State, that is not going to be easy to do.
Yeah, definitely. You know, we'll see what they do. It seems like a tire fire. Anyway, moving on to a less tire fire place, we're going with Pitt at Iowa. 8 o'clock on the BTN on Big Ten Network. Iowa's been surprisingly good. You know, they knocked off Iowa State on the road last week. They had an impressive victory over Illinois State in week one. So maybe they're on a roll and they could take down Pitt this year, who, you know, whose head coach Pat Narduzzi is very familiar with Iowa's offense.
Yeah, that's an interesting part of this game. You know, Pat Narduzzi is familiar with, though, might not be the Iowa that we see. They have looked a little bit more up-tempo, a little bit more creative on the offensive side of the ball. They do have some injury concerns. Mashon Daniels, their best running back, he is going to be a game-time decision. And Drew Ott suffered an arm injury, was seen with a cast last week. He's listed as questionable. I read that they think it might have, the reporters think it might have been a dislocated elbow. He's not going to be out long term, but he might be out against Pittsburgh, who you know, did hold Akron to, I think it was 110 yards. Yeah. Akron only had 110 yards against Pittsburgh, so Narduzzi having a positive impact on that defense right away. Pittsburgh, without James Conner, one of the nation's best running backs, he's out for the year. Just another of the high-profile guys that's been hurt so far. If they had Connor, I think I might like Pittsburgh a little bit better in this game. Without him, I don't think that they have enough offensive firepower to generate any kind of attack against the Hawkeyes, who have a pretty good defense with or without Ott. So I would think that Iowa would have the head up here since at home, but this should be a fun game. It's at night. And it should be a good atmosphere at Kinnick Stadium.
Yeah, Kinnick Stadium at night. It'd be cool to see if they go with the yellow and black stripe out. That's always fun. TJ,
yeah.
We're going to close the show. And thanks for joining me today. Guys, thanks for listening. TJ, you do an awesome job. Keep it up, and we'll be back on Monday with our wrap-up show.
Absolutely. Have a good week, and enjoy the weekend of college football, guys. Go Hoosiers.
All right. Bye. And that'll do it for our episode here, previewing IU Western Kentucky. The game is at 4 p.m. on ESPN News. You can watch it also online at watch ESPN or ESPN3.com. If you're not going to the game, watch it on TV. We'll have you covered. Keep coming back to HoosierHuddle.com for more coverage. Have a great day and enjoy the rest of your week.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
I want to tell you a story. It's a story about a scandal, broken relationships, gossip, rumors, money, corporate rivalry, and a broom. A performance-enhancing broom. My name is John Cullen. I'm a comedian, podcaster, and for 20 years, I was a semi-professional curler. And I want to tell you the story about how a single broom almost imploded the 500-year-old sport of curling.
We felt like we were bringing a knife to a gunfight.
It's the story of a superstar and his fall from grace.
Well, I was being dragged through the mud.
It's the story of two brother entrepreneurs with a dream.
I said, that's great news.
It's a story of intrigue.
I still don't understand why we want to keep his name secret.
The full story has never been told, so I'm going to tell it. Broomgate, how a broom almost killed curling.
It was a year I'd like to forget.
To listen to Broomgate, search for Broomgate in your favorite podcast app. That's all one word, Broomgate.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
I normally find bras to be so uncomfortable and constricting. But Skims has changed that. You know I love Skims underwear, so I finally tried their bras, and Skims has delivered again. Skims bras are worth the hype for the amazing shape and support they give, but what I wasn't expecting was how comfortable they are too. I've tried so many bras in the past, and the main issue that I have is that they weren't supportive enough, to the point where they felt slouchy. I love my Skims wireless form bra because it's so comfortable and supportive. The older I get, the more I care about actually being comfortable in what I wear every day. And with my wireless form bra, I no longer have to sacrifice my comfort for the support I need. Shop Skims bras at skims.com, now available in 62 sizes, 30A to 46H. Plus, get free shipping on all orders over $75. If you haven't yet, be sure to let them know we sent you. After you place your order, select podcast in the survey and select our show in the drop-down menu that follows.